We're coming, and we ain't backing down.
We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Yeah, looking in the mirror. Shut up!
I'm bitterly disappointed with the officiating today.
Guys being dudes.
And they run through our like through a tin horn, man.
Thank you, Lee. SplitZoneDuo.com. SplitZone Duo. My name is Stephen Godfrey. Richard Johnson, the reason you're hearing my voice right now is because Alex Kirshner was supposed to be out. We were supposed to have a substitute teacher, which would have been some combination of you and I acting as authority figures in equally declining measure. We were pushing the television in on the cart with the VHS player ready to go. And lo and behold, from his own vacation, guess who decides to literally join the show on his week off? Why did you do this?
It's a working vacation.
I just want it to be noted. On Thursday morning, I'm getting on a plane and going to a bachelor party. And I'm not going to text you back if you text me from Thursday to Sunday afternoon. That's just not going to happen.
So I was responsible for writing the run of show, and I wrote, Alex is out. And then I just wrote, not out. Okay. I guess because Alex thinks this is funny, I'm going to run the show this week. So prepare.
I also think that's funny, to be fair.
The podcast has been around with me the longest because I'm the oldest, and I was there for the original iteration of the iteration. But I never play the point, ever.
No, but sometimes.
From what little I know about basketball, I hate the point. I'll bang in the post. I'm a decent two guard. Okay. I like to be a wing. Never play the point. So I guess this is just Alex's sort of lulls, and he gets to be here to see it happen.
I'm excited about it. It's part of my vacation. I'm looking forward to it. I mean, I
want to see you resist the urge actually to create the transitions and the subject changes and run the ship.
I will resist the urge, but I'll tell you, Stephen.
Yes, sir.
I've been having a nice week out here in the great state of Utah, a place that I've never been before. So getting to hear you point guard this show, it's like if you do well, then it will enrich my time in this beautiful state.
Okay.
And if you don't do well, then it will be like Rosebud Thorn. It'll be the thorn of my vacation. So
Are you skiing or are you just visiting the soda bars? What are you doing now out there?
I have been skiing. I'm not a skier by trade, but I give it a shot every once in a while. And it's very nice. Big fan of Utah. One of my favorite things so far was that when I flew in on Saturday, I had to wait for some other people who were getting in from the West Coast to get to the Salt Lake City airport. And right when you come out of security, you go on the right, there's this thing called a greeting room that they have at the Utah airport, at the Salt Lake airport, where they set nice couches and you just sit forever. And they don't have this at other airports. And we're sitting there. No, they don't. But we're sitting there for hours and we see all these people like bringing signs and like greeting all of these like 20-year-old looking people coming in.
Hours?
And you're telling me that other airports don't have what you just described?
No, I'm telling you this was a special greeting. And then I Googled it. It's a special thing right outside security that I gather is for people coming back from Mormon missions so their families can greet them with signs right out of security. It's a pretty good idea. Very local.
They're friendly people. All right, Alex. House cleaning first, because I was just going to get all this out of the way in the laziest manner possible since you were supposed to not be here peering over my shoulder. We're off next week. This entire podcast that you're listening to, we're going to be doing two things. We're going to go radio silent on our main Split Zone Duo feed. There will be patron content at splitzoneduo.com. Don't worry about that. But our main show will go silent, will go dark, whatever you want to call it, next week, because the three of us will be meeting in person in the same city to plan out a bunch of fun, neat things for the 23 offseason and the 23 actual college football season. That's all we can say right now. Number two, splitzoneduo.com. We have put up a slew of recent content, including a show that Richard and I are going to record this week, sort of centered around the combine. And it was all rooted in one thing, which was the Anthony Richardson hype, the framing of his collegiate career, and then an honest question that I got from someone that I couldn't really answer. So I'm going to take it to someone who knows a lot more about this, which is one Richard Johnson. Also,
watch the film.
It's going to go great. We also have we would call it analysis. I really would like to not goof around on this one. We had a very measured conversation about context, nuance, and empathy. And why stories like the Georgia car crash, the fatal Georgia car crash, have to be covered. I think if you are interested in or ever feel, you know, highly critical of sports journalism, it's a good listen. We also have a detailed blueprint as to how SMU can join the Pac-12. You heard it here first. Full stop. That's exactly what happened on that show. Shut up. Don't say anything. Number three, home field. As we record this, I think there still are UConn bomber jackets left. I don't know if you boys saw the K-State bomber jackets. We're getting to a point now where, and since Alex, you are here, I want to run this by you as we're doing sort of the faux ad read. I know you are a home field logo sociopath, and we met a lot of those. We, like, most of our listeners are home field logo sociopaths. They will just rep something that's arbitrary, almost contrary to their background, rooting philosophy, affiliation whatsoever, right? This is the man, Alex Kirshner, who, like, you got war eagled at, like, a Pittsburgh Whole Foods or something, right?
Oh, all the time. I mean, I get asked, like, how'd they do last night? And I'm like, I don't know. Like, I have no idea. I don't care about this team.
Yeah. Okay. So with that, would you go bomber jacket? Is it a bridge too far? Because they're absolutely beautiful. And two, I'm proxying my own sort of internal struggle here onto you, because one of my adopted teams on this program, the Wildcats of Kansas State, there's this beautiful purple silk bomber jacket that says Emaw on it. And I thought, you could justify a hoodie. You can justify a T-shirt, right? If you want to be a logo tourist or a sociopath like Alex, you can justify these things. Oh, this is funny. Like, I have a UConn sad husky T-shirt. It's part of the Banner Society DNA, isn't it, boys?
But a
bomber jacket. The other thing that's compounded by this is, I, as a man who does not watch basketball really at all, I watch Hawks highlights on Instagram so I can complain about them at my Vox job. This UConn jacket that's available right now at home field may be one of the best looking jackets, full stop, I think a human being could own.
Yeah,
home Alex, field, would you go bomber jacket for a non-affiliated school?
I think I would. Home field is in the bomber jacket game right now. Sources close to the situation have indicated there could be even more bomber jackets in the future, and that the designs on some of those could be really quite something, even by the standards home field set out. So, yeah, I mean, congrats, Connor and team. You're in your bomber jacket era now.
I have it on good authority as a pretty damn good reporter that if you are a fan of a school in the NCAA tournament and your team is advancing, that you should pay attention to home field. How's that, boys?
That's great. The promo code there is SZD20 for 20% off your first order.
I didn't write the promo code in the show notes. And my guy, see, look, it's already happened. We didn't even get out of the first segment, Richard. Last thing I would say, sure would be cool if there was other merchandise aside from the beautiful Split Zone Duo shirts that you can get at home field. Sure would be cool if Split Zone Duo had other kinds of merchandise that didn't involve wonderful, comfy apparel. It would be cool. Hashtag soon.
Sure would.
Would be cool. Boys.
Sure would.
Okay, here's the deal. So again, just sort of, I want everyone to approach this entire episode with the aesthetic of television comes on television cart, VHS player strapped to it. We're all going to put our heads down on our desk until 55, until the hour, until you hear the bell ring and you can walk out.
It's funny you bring that up, Godfrey, because when I was a kid, that's what we did in school.
Hell yeah.
During literally this week of the year.
Yes, it's actually true. I had an entire I was in Mississippi, so it would have been 11th grade geography. Just completely blindsided because the geography teacher was the basketball coach at the high school, men's and or girls and boys basketball coach. And we sure as heck did no geographying that week.
I will actually never forget watching Florida lose to, I believe, Creighton on a buzzer beater in my elementary school cafeteria.
I saw Bryce Drew the Bryce Drew shot live. I guess I would have been in high school. Yeah. In Mississippi. Yeah. But like in a classroom. What was weird was, oh man, I date myself for a second. The OJ verdict happened while I was in a class in the ninth grade.
Jesus,
I think
Christ.
The ninth grade, maybe the eighth grade. Jesus. Or the ninth grade. And the teachers all made a pact that they wouldn't let people find out live because they were afraid of you know.
Yeah, I bet.
I was in public school.
I bet they didn't.
I was in public school. But. It was funny to go. That was in the suburbs of Washington, D.C. You go to Mississippi. If there was even a remotely interesting sporting event on and that thing fell at 2:30 on a Tuesday. Oh, it's happening. This is not even a roundabout indictment of Mississippi's public education. This is just the way life was. So in the interest of VCR TV gimmick, I've beaten to death already. We all were sort of kind of bring a show and tell bit here. Alex, of course, crashed the party on his vacation, so he brought some stuff too. Where would we like to go first? I have not turned this into a game. I'm not meaning to gamify it. We all have different sort of like kind of non-connected subject matter for this week.
Well, let's.
I'm a lazy point guard, so I want you to call the shot, Richard.
Let's start with the basketball. Tis the season.
Okay.
So we'll get directly to the basketball in a second. But I did. You mentioned something on last week's show that I actually wanted to go back to, because we'll come around to it in a second as it pertains to basketball. But you mentioned something about Amazon taking Black Friday.
Yeah.
We
should clarify.
From college football.
We should clarify. We're talking about football.
Yeah, we're talking about football. Amazon is putting its NFL game, its NFL Black Friday game, which is getting, it'll be the first for the NFL. They are putting it on Black Friday. They are making it free for everybody to watch. And it will be during the day because of antitrust. Basically, the NFL likes its antitrust agreement, and its antitrust agreement stipulates that it cannot play football on Friday nights. So it will not play football on a Friday.
I already
night.
Have
the
a
game,
quick question.
I think, will be at 3-ish Eastern.
This is not the same game that airs on Thanksgiving night.
No, it is not.
Big clarifier there.
Yeah, new Black Friday Friday game.
So a couple years ago, the NFL quietly said, hey, we want to get in on this Thanksgiving business. And we've done that where there's been a Thanksgiving option and there is no. I don't think there'll ever be a team tied to an event the way like the Cowboys and the Lions are tied to Thanksgiving. I don't think they'll ever make that mistake again. I think you're going to have a rotational game. So, for instance, my sadly beloved Atlanta Falcons have lost to the Saints many times on Thanksgiving night, but they've also rotated other rivalries out. I remember, Alex, I want to say the Steelers have done it a handful of times. Mm-hmm. I think the Ravens have done it. I think it was a Steelers-Ravens game.
Got canceled or moved because of COVID a couple years ago, but yeah.
Yeah. So they've always kind of tied a semi-decent divisional rivalry into that game. But Richard, what we're clarifying here is that Amazon is going to put another game on at like what, noon?
Three Eastern.
Okay. For your context, if for some reason you're listening to this podcast that just absolutely picks apart the intricacies of college football and you don't know this, can y'all name off the top of your head the big finger quotes traditional Black Friday games that are played in college football?
Go. Well, Nebraska, Iowa.
Right. And then the other one in the SEC for a long time, although this will probably cease to be in the new SEC, was the battle for the boot, Arkansas and LSU. I can't think of another rivalry that's locked into Black Friday. Now, there have been some games that have moved to Black Friday, and also some G5 conferences have put a couple games on Friday. But by and large, gentlemen, well, Florida State was Black Friday this year, wasn't it? Wasn't it on Friday night?
Yeah, so they played it on Friday night. I had remembered that the SEC was not exactly super thrilled with that. It was in Tallahassee, so the ACC and right. Florida State controlled it. ESPN went to the ACC and Florida State and was like, hey, guys. And it worked pretty well. It had a good rating. The game
was
also
game.
Really good.
Yeah.
I actually talked to some folks at Florida because originally I had heard that Florida was not exactly thrilled with that. As I understand it, Florida is open to that in the future, perhaps. It's not going to happen this year, but the next time, because the game is on CBS, or well, the game has a chance to be on CBS this year because it's in the SEC. Mm-hmm. It's in Gainesville. Mm-hmm. I actually think in the future, once TV stuff is sorted, I think Florida is open to that potentially being a thing in the future.
Okay. All right. By the way, Black Friday 2022, actually, I believe, so they had, it was a slate. I'm not even going to read all these out.
It ain't good.
It was like 12 to 13 games this past year, which, by the way, Iowa did not play Nebraska. Oh, yeah, they did. It was like 4:00 on BTN. Okay, yeah, sorry. I thought there was a year that took off. So you kind of had rivalries here, and this is where I want to go with this, Richard. They plucked a couple like B or C tier rivalry games for Friday, big finger quotes again. So I'm talking about your Territorial Cup, Arizona State. I'm talking about your battle for California between UCLA and Cal. I'm talking about FSU and Florida in primetime.
I think they just call that one. Don't they just call that one the game?
I guess.
No, that's Stanford Cal.
I'm talking about your NC State.
Oh, I misheard you. Excuse me. Yes.
I'm talking about your NC State, North Carolina. I'm talking about yet another. I always love when Texas trots out their Thanksgiving game because it's not A&M anymore until it is again. And, you know, for a long time, they would stick TCU, Texas there this past year. It was Baylor in Texas. So, like, That's a lineup. You had at least two games going, if not three, in every major time slot until you got, there was the Seoul game in primetime, which is the Florida game, and then there was a really late, a 10 p.m. Wyoming-Fresno game. So, it, not a full day by our definition, but a very full non-Saturday. I would say the most full non-Saturday of the regular season. Richard, I threw this out as an aside last week. I can't, what were we talking about?
Don't even remember.
Okay, cool. I like this.
You think I listen to you when you speak?
I like this. I'm fine with this. I think we're all fine with this. And just so I can clarify this before we dive in, Richard, I'm also fine if they trot out the corpse of, like, I don't know, the Colts and Texans just to drop it there. That's fine. I would like to ask real quick, and I you probably don't have the answer because we don't know the information. Is there any flex in this Amazon deal? Or would the NFL be locked?
I am not sure if there's flex with that. I know that they're flexing Monday night. They're going to start flexing Monday nights this season.
Makes sense.
And the flexing is going to get weird. I do not know if there's Thursday flexing.
So I joke, but you could lock in a game that would have no real playoff value at this point and could be very bad.
Yeah, because remember last year it was the Patriots and the Vikings, which before the season you would have thought.
That's a banger.
Yeah. And then the Patriots shit the bed.
So I'm fine. And
the Vikings were weirdly still like undefeated or some shit.
I'm totally fine with whatever game wants to. And it could be a good game. And it could also be a helmet game if they want to do like Cowboys Packers. Fine. Whatever. I don't have a problem with them playing on Thursday night. If the Falcons are on Thursday night, usually I watch it. Like, I don't have a problem with the NFL moving around. I'm not trying to build walls. What I'm trying to do is protect my sport. And what happens, inarguably, is that anytime the NFL makes an incursion on one of these spots, college football, which kind of just means ESPN at this point, retreats. The inventory for Thursday night games across college football has plummeted in terms of quality. And I want to say frequency as well. They gave Thursday night to the NFL. What I said, again, can't even remember the subject matter, doesn't matter, was I don't want Amazon, and I'm like, put the game on, do whatever. I don't want to lose Black Friday for college football. That's it. That's all I'm asking. And so there is a weird sort of rhythm and regularity to, like, I know Nebraska's going to play Iowa, and I know X game, Y game. And also, by the way, I think it would be smart if some of these conferences would just lock in and say, UCLA is always going to, well, bad example. Sorry. UCLA is not always going to play Cal on Friday. Actually, literally, as I look at this, I can't find one that I know is going to stay the same for a while. But if we could do that, if we could do that and just have five, like, okay, UNC, NC State is always going to be played on Black Friday, like the Iowa-Nebraska game. Let's pick four of those and build around it. By the way, it was Arkansas and Missouri this year, and they've moved the border war. It used to be the boot. Now it's the border war.
A&M and Texas, you would imagine will come back to Thanksgiving night when they enter the league next year, when Texas enters the league next year. What do you do with the Egg Bowl? Don't know.
I don't know.
Do you stick that on Black Friday? I don't know.
But Richard, you and I have both heard those four schools that we just mentioned, like, given the year, have varying feelings about being the Thanksgiving game. Like, I always loved it when it was backyard brawl, because that's not something I had to go cover necessarily, being in the South, and it was fun. It was a good rivalry game. Obviously, they hate each other, so I don't know off the top of my head of two schools that would lock in and say, all right, we're going to make our fans trot out on Thanksgiving night every other year for 10 years. Because people think Mississippians get excited about that. And that's just not on both sides. That's just not the case. And also, that's the time of year where the South doesn't get like winter cold, but it does just rain sideways in 40 degree weather. It's usually pretty terrible.
My point here, taking away from it, is this. There's a difference between the NFLification of the month's football is on, mm-hmm, and the month's football is not on. And the month's football is not on right now is right now. It's March.
Right.
And what you've got right now, I think, is absolutely fascinating in how NFL free agency has really crept into this week. And I think in ways that I hadn't realized, really taken what used to be. Are you guys doing brackets this year?
I haven't filled one out yet.
Yeah,
I did. So I can say this really fast.
You're going to do one.
The only thing I do, is the SED bracket. I literally set a 30-second timer on my phone. And then once I make a pick, I never go back. And so I did the men's and women's bracket in 30 seconds each. Go K-State.
Good for you. This is, you know, Selection Sunday was Sunday, and this is the NCAA tournament. Look, I don't want to do by and large, college basketball is dying or what have you. But you can't sit here and say that college basketball, as far as a cultural like sticking point and a cultural thing we coalesce around, particularly as far as its players are concerned, has ever been less of a thing. The ratings are fine for college basketball. People are watching college basketball. But as far as its cultural sticking power and staying power, the fact that it feels like NFL free agency, and I do think things change once Thursday afternoon comes and we tip a ball up.
But then it only lasts for 2 days.
Right. Like
you're one of those fans.
I'm not.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to say it that way. I'm kind of that way too, where I feel like, man, even when you get to the second weekend, it doesn't have the same feeling. Sorry. So I'm one of those fans.
But it just feels like the run up, the Sunday to Thursday run up to the tournament, has just been kind of like,
because of NFL free agency.
Because of fucking Aaron Rodgers. Like, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like it's just a little bit different. So, I think the thing is, it becomes a little bit more different every year. And I find every year, you know, over the last five or six, you're kind of like, it's Thursday at noon and you're like, oh shit, the game's wrong. You know what I mean? Like, I'm doing a bracket. I'm throwing $20 in, but you're like, oh, the game's wrong. Nice.
Okay. Some of this I'm going to point out is your age, and I'm not making a joke here, because when I was in my early 20s, like, the world shut down. Like, we were in a bar at 10 a.m. on Thursday, and we left the bar at 10 p.m. on Thursday, and we had 9 brackets and 9 pools. And like, it really was life until like the end of the second weekend, really. So I would warn you, it's partially that. Where you're going is, I think, informative, but it's also highly subjective. Can I just ask you, like, I know you don't do like company-wide meetings a lot at Sports Illustrated, but that's sort of the Tiffany legacy masthead that's left in sports journalism. Is that the feeling internally, that NFL free agency is above the like this best week of college basketball?
I would say, I think it's a little bit different, because I think once you hit March, I do think people start to care. People remember it is a thing. You know, it's we set our circadian rhythms to it.
Yeah.
In March. So I would definitely say that, yeah, like, college basketball coverage has an uptick at a lot of websites in March, just because that's when people care. I think the time frame in which people really deeply care about college basketball used to be Super Bowl until it's over. And now it feels like it's now conference tournaments, or even the tournaments.
Right. Tournament
until it's
so over. You're confirming, in sort of a backdoor way, my fear that the NFL is just essentially cultural kudzu. It's just going to cover whatever it does.
That is what the NFL is.
Yeah.
However, I think part of this is also just that for casual college sports fans, I think that the sport that we podcast about has also played some role in blotting out a little bit of college basketball shine.
I think he's got a good point.
There.
I think
Take
he's got
me
a
there,
good
Alex.
Point.
College football has become a year-round sport. We benefit from this immensely in the fact that it's March and we can do podcasts about college football. And
splitsandduo.com.
You know, I think that is something that has happened. If I could even trace this back to one thing, it would probably be like around the turn of the millennium, when recruiting coverage hit the internet and became a year-round obsession. Like,
it's Bud's fault.
It is all your fault, Bud Elliott. like, I just think that college football has, maybe not to the extent of the NFL, but to a recognizable extent, subsumed attention. And everything is competing with everything else for attention. And so, I do think there's less shine among a casual. And to be clear, there are always going to be diehard college basketball fans who are in it from October to April 2nd when the season ends, or April 3rd when the season ends, and who treat college basketball in the off season the way that we treat college football in the off season. But I think that for the fence sitter, for the cat, for like the alum of a school who loves their athletic teams but has to figure out what to care about, I think college football has just taken up more and more. The exception is that now there are a handful of football schools where their basketball teams are suddenly good. Like Houston is amazing at basketball. Alabama is the number one seed in the tournament this year. Like, and I think, you know, Auburn is an example with Bruce Pearl, what he's done there. So like, there are always going to be places where what I'm saying is not true, but I think nationally it is true.
Well, and in the aughts, you had two football schools banging it out, like Ohio State, Florida, for those 2 years. That was weird.
That's right.
And then, which, by the way, was up against the, Richard, was it a Fiesta Bowl national title game?
It was Ohio State in 06. And then, I also think some of this year's college basketball thing has to do with Duke's off the pace. Carolina's not in either tournament.
Kentucky sucks.
Kentucky's like fine. Yeah. Kentucky stinks and is fine.
Almost missed it.
I think college football needs some of this too, but like college basketball does need its big brands to kind of have some weight here. And they aren't.
Is it weird that
not to say that,
or I was gonna say, is it weird that some of their big brands are like actually small schools to us in our world? I think about this all the time. So what I'm asking about is like, you would look at a Sweet 16 that has UConn, Villanova, Gonzaga, Xavier, like that. You'd be like, damn, that's a pretty classic year.
Yeah.
But of course, in our world, that doesn't mean, you know, fuck all. And so I think about that a lot.
Good, like, FCS team, though. Consistent.
Great FCS team. But what I'm saying is like, does that have any kind of reverse effect? I wonder. I mean, like, and I'm not trying to be hyper regional. In fact, I usually strive to break away from that. But how big is the Nova fan base? How big? Like, I when I was a kid, Georgetown, like Hoya Paranoia was a thing, but I don't know if it was a thing outside of like the DMV and certain black communities. I don't think it was like doing Ohio State, Michigan numbers.
Nova's a good example that you bring up. And like, how big is the fan base? Not huge. There are I always forget the number, but there are so many colleges in Philadelphia that they are competing with for enrollment and
Temple, St. Joe's. Isn't it five, right?
Drexel. I'm blanking live because I didn't prepare for this, but like more and several more. And then you have like your non-athletic, non-Division I sports playing colleges. Like you have Swarthmore, Bryn Mawr. Like you've got all kinds of universities.
Jesus Christ.
My guy went deep.
But I think that if you are a Big East school, the Big East being like the best example of this, or if you're Gonzaga in the WCC, you can build a great basketball team with fewer resources and less buildup than you need for a football team. Like,
this is why I'm not joking.
But what's the smallest university? What's the smallest university in the country that has a blue blood football program? Is it Clemson?
By enrollment? It's USC.
USC. All right. Exactly.
Sure.
And USC has other advantages.
Yes.
What are those?
I have no idea. It's just, but like, you know, it is hard to spin up and to maintain a great football program. Like UCLA didn't have a full length practice field until the last decade, and they're in LA and they're rich. I mean,
we're going to talk about them in a minute.
So yeah,
the one thing I will say here before we kind of transition here is, so the first thing I'm going to say is the institution coaches are leaving. Kay's gone. Roy's gone.
Yeah.
Boeheim just got
Godfrey. I can't wait to tell.
That was kind of weird.
Let me tell Godfrey about this. I'm sure he hasn't read about it. So Godfrey, do you know who Jim Boeheim is?
Yes.
Okay. So you know what Syracuse is? It's a city in New York.
God damn it.
Jim Boeheim is the coach of Syracuse for a lot of years. Like in total, he spends, I think, 47 or so years as the head coach of Syracuse.
And I know
people
this.
Have been getting tired of Jim Boeheim, I think it is fair to say, for a while. And
about the radio thing?
Oh, no, this happened too.
This is good. Keep going.
Because I tweeted about it.
And Jim Boeheim basically, you know, he's always been kind of a curmudgeon, but he is really, really on edge over the last year in particular. And remember, this is a guy who had been Teflon for years. Like, you know, his support of Bernie Fine, one of his assistant coaches, who had some really ugly, ugly allegations made against him about the abuse of minors. Boeheim publicly supported him. Tully had to apologize. There was a lawsuit settled, a defamation suit settled between Boeheim and the school and some of these accusers. And that was fine for Boeheim. That was fine. He was Teflon. Nothing could hurt him. But he started losing and losing and losing, and Syracuse stopped being a really good basketball program. And this dude was just like completely on edge and saying bizarre stuff. Like he accused Wake Forest of buying a basketball team with NIL payments, which like, okay. And then had to like withdraw that and like pretend he never did. He goes around telling people that nobody wants him to retire, and like 95% of the people that he sees that come up to him say, "Coach, please don't retire. We want you to stay." And then they lose this buzzer beating game to Wake Forest, the team that he had dragged through the media mud a couple months earlier. They lose a buzzer beater in Greensboro, which Boeheim hates because he has said that they should not have the ACC tournament in Greensboro. And then after the game, and sorry for the long wind up here, and if you've been following this at home.
No, this is good.
After the game, Boeheim gives a weird press conference where he's like, he kind of hints that he's retiring, but doesn't say that he is or not. He fields questions like, "Hey, are you saying you're retiring?" He's like, "No, it's up to the school. I just said what I said. It's up to the school." And then within like 2 hours, Syracuse puts out a press release saying that Jim Boeheim's storied career has come to an end, and his assistant,
it's like an obit.
His assistant has now taken over as that coach.
It is like an obit.
There is nothing there. If you do a control F on this page, resigned, stepped aside, retired, fired, not said, nothing.
What's the verb?
Just a conscious parting of the ways, a conscious uncoupling between Syracuse and the coach. And what it reminded me of, was remember when Bobby Bowden was getting, you know, shoved to the door at Florida State. And then, and then Bowden gave that interview at probably some like touchdown club meeting after that, where he's like, "So what happened between you and Florida State?" And he's like, "I wasn't fired. You know, fire is too strong, but pushed out. You could say I was pushed out." That was
by
fair.
Jimbo.
I think we need a verb that is not fired, but is not retired, and does not deposed. Grant does not grant that Jim Boeheim or Bobby Bowden deposed. Or whoever retired. Yeah, deposed. But run out of town is too mean.
Too strong.
Pushed out. Pushed out is the thing.
No, Alex, I think that honestly was really, I learned something in that soliloquy about Jim Boeheim, to be honest.
I'm gonna try and create a transition out of this. Go ahead, Richard.
I just heard he's not in the job, and that's kind of weird. The other thing that I was getting at as far as, okay, your institution coaches are leaving college basketball, but also one of the things that, and look, Jim Boeheim, I actually kind of agree with him on this. I think the transfer portal for college basketball has been real rough, at least for men's college basketball, has been real rough. And I think when you combine the portal, you combine the G League stuff, you combine that like overtime elite, whatever the hell that thing is, that like Instagram handle that like started a basketball team, mm-hmm. a school. Seriously, look it up. And you combine that with one and done. You combine that with Europe. Like, it's just it feels different from as far as the player base is concerned. And I know Purdue's got some big guy who I think is going to become a darling this year if they go far. Good.
Yeah.
But besides that, okay. Thought exercise. And look, I can't even do this probably for my own alma mater, but name me 5 college basketball players right now.
I can't do it.
Sure, I'm going to sit this out because I can, but
Can because Why? You watch college basketball.
Oh.
I cannot do that.
No, I can't.
I can't do that.
I mean, I can name one who's involved in a murder investigation.
I will say that is where I'm going next, because as Alex is also about to tell us, the one college basketball player you can probably name, and I do think it's a problem that I think your non-college basketball playing friends, significant others, and parents are about to be able to name this young man too, because if Alabama goes as far as they are projected to go, given they're the number one seed, this story is going to jump the sports shark, baby. This is going to be like Good Morning America.
You know,
shit.
Sankey is secretly praying that they get bumped in the 16 end of week one.
Dude, Nick Saban is hoping that.
Yeah.
I'm not even going to go all the way in. I don't want to go all the way into college basketball coach sort of stuff. It's not even the only college basketball murder investigation.
Yeah.
There was a team this year that had to stop
going on in college.
There was a
basketball
team this year that self-imposed the death penalty.
Yep.
Which actually is not a good mixing of metaphors, but you know what I mean. New Mexico State just stopped having a basketball season for team culture reasons.
I hazing, feel like we got to get like out that of this segment before our entire fan base realizes that college basketball is way cooler when it comes to like the grimy shit and way more sensational and like way more HBO than
when
even,
it comes to the
even
grimy
our
shit,
sport
yeah,
is.
But also, like, college basketball can do the like the actually bad at a very high level. I mean, that's a sport. Like, it packs its punch.
It is considered like, I get this a lot when we do Bagman crap out in LA and Hollywood with like producers who are just sport agnostic if they even like sports. Their brains always go to college. If you say college, you're going to basketball first. And after this year, I mean, Jesus, there's probably, I guarantee you there'll be some dramatic miniseries with like a fake team now sold to like some streamer. Passed off as like premier television.
Speaking of streamers, let's quickly truncate the Alabama thing because I don't want to, you know,
are you transitioning?
Well, I was going to transition out. I was going to set Alex up because I know Alex wants to talk about it.
Is Alex the point guard today? I see how it is. Uh-huh. That's fine.
All I'm saying is the ball, basketball term, the ball stopped. And didn't swing. Is that the right basketball
didn't
term?
Pass.
The ball stopped and didn't swing.
All right,
didn't go.
Alex,
in the post.
What the hell?
Anyway,
are you doing?
I just want to put something to you guys. While we're kind of on this episode that goes from sport to sport, like with its loose college football associations, Brandon Miller, the player at Alabama, obviously is, as Richard says, is going to become, in not necessarily a good way, if Alabama wins a lot of games here, is going to become like an outside of just college basketball fans household name in the next couple of weeks. Absolutely. We all understand. I think everyone at this point, if you're listening to this show, you're probably acquainted with the background facts of his connection to a capital murder investigation in Tuscaloosa. Okay. I have a question that's more about the school handling of this, and it's not even about why Alabama didn't suspend him or whether they should have while they were still figuring out exactly what his role in this story might have been. Instead, it's a question about the SEC and about how SEC athletic departments operate. I think that this would be a huge story no matter what, that, you know, the number one player on the number one team in the country transported a weapon that was used in a killing and that is being investigated as a murder would be a big story no matter what. But I think it became like a more explosive college sports scandal when Nate Oates, the head coach, started talking and did not talk well, called it, you know, Miller being in the wrong place at the wrong time, said college kids are out, you can't control when they're not at practice.
Right.
He disclosed that one of the people he called for advice on how to handle this was Ray Lewis, who has obstructed a double murder investigation and pleaded to that in his life.
No comment.
Alabama's athletic director.
Look, call an expert, but my word.
Greg Byrne, who I think is a smart guy and is pretty well regarded as an athletic director. Like, we're not talking about him like we talk about Gary Barta, kind of twisted himself into knots, defending his coach, you know, sort of after this all came out. Like, Nate Oates had been saying, oh, well, we knew about this connection between Miller and the case, and we felt comfortable playing anyway. And the next day, Greg Byrne was like, but you have to remember, Coach Oates only has so much information as well. Like, he doesn't know everything. Only law enforcement is everything. And Greg Byrne sounded like kind of a dumbass, frankly, while talking
about
this.
The only reason that Greg Byrne sounded like a dumbass was because he had to, because his coach did that up front. And I guarantee you, as God is my witness, at some point in the last 45 days, behind closed doors, Greg Byrne has crawled all the way up the ass of Nate Oates so far that he danced out his jaw, because Greg Byrne is one of the smartest, most calculating people in the entire college sports landscape. And for him to even look 1% stupid and he was what? More than 1% stupid,
I mean, solid 40,
right?
50. Yeah.
I guarantee you he wore that asshole out behind closed doors. I guarantee it. Sorry.
Now, here's my question. And I'm also one other related thing about this is that I don't know if you saw during the SEC tournament, Arkansas lost a game, and on the way off, and Arkansas is good, by the way.
Arkansas
is going to be in the tournament, probably not going to win it all, but you know, they've been a good basketball team for a few years now. Their coach is a guy named Eric Musselman, very good coach, came from Nevada. So one of the Arkansas support staffers, like, on the way off the court, puts his hand out and pretty clearly, because there's video of it, grabs/slaps/aggressively knocks away. I would say
he smacks down the phone.
Yeah, smacks down, you know, aggressively some guy's phone who's just like a journalist covering the game. And okay, obviously dumb. You can't do that. Like, it's not good behavior. Everyone knows that. I'm not saying that the guy should never work again or anything like that. But the thing that I noticed was that the athletic director at Arkansas, Hunter Yurecek, put out like one of the least believable statements that I think I've ever like read in my life after this happened. And I'm just going to read the relevant portion of Hunter Yurecek's statement about this. He says, "During our conversation, Mr. Hall, who is the support staffer, expressed his regret that while leaving the floor, his engagement inadvertently resulted in knocking down the reporter's cell phone from his hand," end quote. Obviously hilarious. Like I can't, whoever had to write that, like, I don't know if they could do it with a straight face. I don't really care about any of this. Like, I hope the phone wasn't broken. Obviously it deserves an apology. But my question is, Do SEC athletic departments just think that because it's basketball, no one is paying attention to what they are saying and their actions? No, because you know where that photographer
was from? You know where that kid was from?
No.
Lexington, Kentucky. So You don't hide that. I just think it was I think the word soup assembled by Arkansas there was almost certainly done with a lawyer's input. That would be my guess. Because you're talking about potential, you're talking about accosting another body, and then you're getting into, is it some sort of, you know, ninth degree assault or something like that? That would be my initial guess. And if I poked around at it, I would guess that they wanted to put something out as quickly as possible that assumed no culpability for any physical action from an Arkansas employee to that individual. So that's why it's phrased that way.
I guess I am still going to posit that it is probably a little bit new for SEC basketball programs to feel like they have this many eyeballs on them. And like, Arkansas fans are going to get mad at me because Arkansas has had a pretty serious basketball fan base for a long time.
Won a national title in 1994.
I understand that. Like, I'm not saying that Arkansas doesn't care about basketball. But you know, like,
get him, boys.
Like, the SEC has an SID for football who I think Godfrey probably hates you.
Hates my
but like
guts.
Like, in football, you just don't really see SEC teams make like egregious communications mistakes. They just do like, you know, bad stuff and then kind of say like, oh, well, you know, yeah, we did that, but like, means more, baby. Like, that's why we're here. Whereas I'm just not sure that SEC basketball teams are very good at crisis communications, which, to be fair, I don't know why they would have to be.
Are you going to, is that it?
Oh yeah. I just wanted to share that thought this week.
That's the only thing you think that the SEC or an SEC program has handled poorly in basketball this week? Is there anything else you could think of?
It's sitting right there.
Is there anything else you could think of?
It is on a tee for you. Knock it right down the fairway. Stephen Godfrey, please swing the driver.
Hotty toddy.
Goodness gracious. Yes. SEC college basketball has been incredible. Right.
And also Ole Miss hiring Chris Beard. It's embarrassing behavior. It's embarrassing behavior brought to you by the school that helped rehabilitate DJ Durkin. It's embarrassing behavior. Let's just move on. I don't feel like giving them too much time about this.
Man, but Godfrey, how are you going to give me a transition out of this? By the way, I brought a football topic today. What was I thinking?
You're the point guard.
So, yeah, we've spent like 40 minutes talking about things that are only sort of college football.
I did bring a football topic for a decidedly basketball school historically.
But you know what? Decidedly, maybe not college football, but as usual, everything is Mississippi. You see where the ball stopped.
With Chip Kelly, Mississippi?
Take it somewhere, point guard.
God, Chip Kelly signed an extension this week. And here's why. UCLA is good. And we all forgot. I'm really just going to pose a lot of questions here. I want to get through this and not use the phrase unpack or sit down with or any of that modern nonsense jargon. But I want us to think about this. It is good. No.
Okay. This is
the news UCLA, item or what?
Well, the news item in and of itself in that offshoot of the thing I'm getting at with when you say should Jimbo be fired, when you say should Ryan Day get fired, you should be able to build something at a slow pace.
All right, so speaking of that slow pace, Chip Kelly
is doing that.
Chip Kelly signed an extension through 2027. I don't know if this when the school officially announced it, but I was going off of the LA Times reporting because they did all the FOIA work. So credit to the LA Times, essentially. So his 23 and 24 salaries are going to be raised to 6.1, and then they graduate from there. I think it's like by values of $100,000 or $200,000 per season. Not really the point. The point I want to make is he got an extension last year, but the deal that he got last year sort of had some PR inside of it. And here's what I mean by that. So heading into the 2022 season, he got a 4-year, $22 million extension, but there was very little risk involved for UCLA at the time. We've talked a lot about how some of these extensions are extensions in name only, or some of these extensions are very risk friendly for the school. This was one of those, and when we talk about his trajectory and Richard's aforementioned sort of slow pace here, you'll understand why. And I want to identify all of this because we have officially, in UCLA's eyes, in Kelly's eyes, in the Pac-12's eyes, we have changed eras at UCLA under Chip Kelly, and we're no longer treating this as experimental, which is a big deal unto itself, I think. Had they fired him after the 22 extension, the buyout would have only been about $4 million, which is not nothing, but certainly consumable for UCLA. The buyout now jumps to 8.5 this year, 4.27 after 24, and then zero after 2025. So even with this very big boy, big football, we care about football signifying deal, UCLA still is not really hemmed in any sort of like Gus Malzahn, Auburn type situation. I want to ask, is this the slowest build possible for a quote successful run at a power, whatever, five, for however long we're going to use that school, because he's 27 and 29 overall entering the season. This is the win total by year that we've done. 3, 4, 3, 8, and then 9 in the 2022 season. So you can see why that extension was constructed the way it was heading into 2022. I don't know if this is a me problem. I don't know if the majority of our listeners are going to feel this when I say it. I don't know if I'm just going to be screamed at by like a handful of small but very passionate West Coast football fans. The Bruins feel a little bit like they got Eternal Sunshine out of our collective memory at different points of the season. They started 6-0. They had the wonky finish where like South Al probably should have upset them early and we really would have forgotten about them, but they were 6-0. They went all the way to that game in Autzen against Oregon, against Chip's old team. Game day was there. That happened. All right.
It did happen.
They lost that game, I think by 15.
It was a snoozer. Yeah. It wasn't like a horrible blowout, but they were not especially close to winning.
Yes. And then they finished 3-4 after, and that game was like 9-10 or 8-9, I think. They finished 3-4 down the stretch. There's also some crap in there. They lost to Arizona. They lost to Pitt to end the season. So there's some reasons why casual non-West Coast affiliated college football fan might have sort of let this dissipate. All right. In the offseason, this offseason, they have flipped a 5-star quarterback, Dante Moore, from Oregon. And by the way, that kid's from Michigan. I want to just stop and point all this out because God knows we have beat the drum for like 2 years on this program about California-based 5-star talent going east or south. This kid,
Bryce Young plays for Alabama.
This kid's, you know, Michigan, Detroit area. He will replace DTR, who was the quarterback at UCLA for like 20 fucking years, it feels like.
It went Aikman, Thompson Robinson.
Pretty much. Yeah. Yes. I mean, it does have like Jeff Smoker vibes. They failed to get out of the shadow. This is sort of the last kind of thought I have of this. Am I alone in sort of constantly forgetting UCLA or not validating success because it was either too slow or because it's UCLA or because it's LA? They did not work with the window USC gave them, right? During the Helton decline.
They did not.
Because they didn't get their shit together enough and beat USC enough before the Riley parade starts again. All right. Now, counter to that, look, they're in a solid position. They're headed to the Big Ten the same way that the Trojans are. All right. So they're on some kind of equal footing, it's going to be so weird here to frame this up as like where they, I was thinking about this before we went on the show. Cause when I was presenting this, we don't spend a lot of time giving equity and weight and comparative analysis to the Pac-12 after. Is like, oh, is USC good? Okay. Whoa, man, Utah surprised us. Or like, what's Oregon doing? That bam. That's probably the Pac-12 in a nutshell for 95% of college football media. That's east of what's our defining line? The Rockies, we always say. So UCLA falls outside of that. It's going to be super weird in a couple of years, boys, when we're like, I'm trying to figure out, is UCLA, like, okay, UCLA is not Penn State, but are they above Michigan State? Like, place, like, I, no, no, this is not, this is a hype. Yeah. I'm saying, no, like, it's just weird to think that, and we're going to have to do that.
It, also, it is possible that UCLA in the Big Ten becomes Nebraska in the Big Ten. Totally, totally could happen.
Like, prior to Matt Rhule maybe having finally figured out Nebraska, like Scott Frosty, I mean, Nebraska
for the last 10 years. Yeah. I mean, it could be, but you just don't know. You just don't know. It's, I think that it will be hard for UCLA to ever win the Big Ten, but then again, it was hard for UCLA to ever win the Pac-12. So,
right. And so, you know, I bring UCLA and just the simple announcement of a contract extension, because I'm going through the headlines, figuring out what we want to talk about here in this gully of news in March. And it strikes me that one, we have not established, guys, if this was South Carolina, or it was Michigan State, I think this would have been noticed, framed, and sort of picked apart or ballyhooed or shit on or whatever umpteen more times. And I'm not blaming us. I'm not blaming anybody. It does go back to the fact that I also looked at this schedule where I was like, they were 6-0 and I didn't know that. Yeah, dude, because they fucking play on a network I can't get, and I do this for a living. So it's look, like Richard's throwing
Richard,
his hands up.
Richard,
on
Richard,
I mean,
is
like,
right about this. Richard is right about this.
I want to consume this. Like, right. I want to, like, right. I want to bring this to the podcast I own that I take out into the public square of media and say, we're different than ESPN. We're different than CBS because we, you know, we get to dictate. We're whole hog, and I can't even do that. And so I'm not really, this is not me beating myself up. I'm not going to castigate myself here, because this may be the best example as to like why the Larry Scott effect will still be felt for so long and why they left.
You might be losing me a bit there, to be honest. I think like,
I just think we got inured to ignoring so much of the Pac-12 that wasn't the one or two pieces of marquee.
Okay.
And then a build like this, because to go back, remember, like, there in no point in time, save for maybe upsetting Ed Orgeron on Labor Day weekend in 21, does UCLA catch zeitgeist more than like hosting game day against Oregon? I think we've worn down the Pac-12's value and equity because of mainly their own doing. And it's hard for even someone who, like, I am telling you, I live in Nashville, have an SEC degree, am from Georgia. I overcorrect.
Steven, I will say this.
I want to talk about Oregon State. I want to talk about Boise, and I'm missing this. I don't know who to blame.
Give yourself a break. I'm always down for a little Larry Scott layup line, as is anybody. You know, just like, this guy was one of the worst administrators in college sports history. Although while I'm in the great state of Utah with my dear friend Bob, who's a Split Zone Duo patron, who's downstairs right now, I am thinking, by the way, that I'm currently at the site of one of the only things that guy did right, which was bringing Utah and Colorado into the Pac-12. So wasn't all bad. I think that in the case that you are talking about here, why on earth am I defending Larry Scott right now?
I'm curious where this is going.
UCLA has its own way of fading into the background long before Larry Scott came and messed up the media rights situation for the Pac-12. So while I do share the urge to pin many things on Larry Scott, even if they had hired the most competent commissioner in the world, I think that UCLA might still have, you know, Alex, had a quiet, competent few years under Chip Kelly.
Alex, they beat the Utah team that we gave flowers to, like, on a really long segment recently, where we all came in our own distinct ways from college football, from narrative to scheme to personnel, and said,
They beat
the Washington team that has maybe one of the most electrifying quarterbacks in the game and a coaching staff that's being pulled, like, you know, being recruited by Alabama. They beat them the week before. Like, did this happen in my head? It's just very strange to look at now.
I do think one thing about UCLA that bothers me, and you're talking about how you think that they've gone under the radar, which I agree with. And I agree with Richard that, like, it kind of is nice that we're not just like rushing to fire coaches who are doing fine. And I'm glad that no one's done that with Chip. But the other thing about UCLA that goes in the other direction that I do not appreciate is that, Stephen, do you know what, or Richard, do you know what UCLA's record was last year?
In football?
Nine and four.
That's right.
Nine and four. They were 9-3 and then they lost the bowl game to Pitt.
Yeah, to Pitt. Speaking of Pitt, Pitt finished 9-4.
Okay.
Having beaten UCLA with its backup quarterback at the Sun Bowl. And yet, when AP voters put together the final AP poll of the season, 9-4 UCLA with a loss to Pitt's backup quarterback was 21. And 9-4 Pitt with a win with a backup quarterback over UCLA was 22.
How are you going this way?
They're just making it up, man. They're just making it up.
If we can get Ralph Russo from the AP on here at some point and do our usual dunk on the polls, but I guess I don't know. I guess I get where you're headed with that. But I remember, Alex. Actually, you know what? I'm going to answer my own question. You had a quarterback that everyone in the nation knew for a little bit at Pitt, not this year, but the year prior, and they went to a New Year's Six Bowl. To slightly defend myself again, and then we'll get out of here. Richard, can you name their biggest win under Chip Kelly?
It's probably that LSU game.
It's probably the Utah game.
Or did they? Or that LSU game. Or the year they lost to Oregon that year.
Do you know what they did?
The LSU season opener was big because it was a season opener.
Yeah, the LSU game was big.
Do you know what they did? Yeah, do you know what they did after they beat LSU?
Man,
they lost at home to Fresno.
Jake Haener game. Thank you. It was the Jake Haener game. Yeah.
Yeah. Haener absolutely gutted a defense that
while his guts were falling out of his torso.
That's the ribs game.
Yeah.
Look, I'm just happy UCLA found the money under the couch cushions to pay Chip Kelly because nobody's paying for their media rights. Hey-o!
You know what? I'm not going to abide this again, Richard. While I'm in Utah, I'm not going to abide this disrespectful tone. I am wondering,
Mike Oresko's,
though,
Mike Oresko's words, not mine.
I am wondering about something. So, as Godfrey said, we're off next week on this feed, on the free feed, that we will have some bonus content for patrons. Is there going to be? I do not have the like Pac-12 doomsday thing that a lot of people in media have, but like, are they going to have a deal by the time we are back on this feed in 2 weeks?
So we have 2 weeks from just to break the fourth wall here, we're actually recording this late on the 14th of March.
So March 29th would probably be our next recording for this free Split Zone Duo. Like, are they going to have this thing done by then? Because I can only have so many more leaked stories from the Big 12's consultants about how they're talking to Utah and Colorado and Arizona State. I'm missing who am I?
Not really true.
I'm sure it's not maybe that's content for Patreon. Anyway, I'm sick and tired of this like leak campaign that is being waged through CBS Sports Stories and has been for 6 months now Big 12's office, and it will not stop until they sign a deal. So for my own sanity, I need the Pac-12 to sign a deal so that we can talk about other stuff.
Guys, we just put someone in the media on blast and it wasn't me. I feel like I should go take a walk.
No, it's not on blast. It is what has been happening. It's very clear that the Big 12 has been blitzing one publication in particular, with a line that it is in ongoing active negotiations with the four
corners. With the Dallas Cowboys.
With Colorado, with Utah, with Arizona, with Arizona State. And you have seen Utah's AD roll his eyes at this on Twitter.
Yo, he gave it the Twitter emoji.
Like, I think that most people in the industry
understand. Which is, as we all know, the highest form of expression.
I think most people in the industry understand what's going on here. The Big 12 is trying to play a media game. Maybe they are using consultants for that. Maybe they're doing it themselves. I don't know, but I'm getting tired of it. Sign a deal, Pac-12. Move on.
Brett Yormark is a rock star, and he's very popular and dashing. He's very pretty, and I hope he takes me to prom.
I will say this about the Pac-12 and its rights deal. Will they have it by the end of the month? Not quite sure. I have heard an estimate that within a month, which you will note, is pushed back from a couple of the arbitrary deadlines put in place by athletic directors in the league, which I think Ray Anderson said he'd like something right around now. I believe Washington State's AD said he'd like something by the end of the month. I think that by mid-April, we'll probably have something. Right. I think the Pac-12's messaging problem is in one line, that what I just said. It is not only that the Big 12 is absolutely on offense, which, okay, they can do whatever they want to do. I think you combine that with the facts that the Pac-12's office is not saying shit about shit, in combination with the fact that you have member schools who are saying stuff. That's why I think the you link those three things together, and I think you have a very deep messaging problem as the Pac-12. I do think the Pac-12's deal will probably end up beating the Big 12 by a couple mil per school, and even if it doesn't, that is not going to be enough for four corner schools to leave. I've said that on a Patreon show. The existential threat to the Pac-12 is not now. It is the next go-around.
Absolutely agree.
That's when the real doom sets in.
I'm not as LOL at the Pac-12 as Richard or a lot of people, but what Richard just illustrated, if you want to look at it a different way, take that behavioral model that Richard just identified and apply it to other conferences, and it wouldn't happen. It wouldn't happen. You would never have member institutions of the Big Two. You would never have, like, I know you're seeing something you think is similar in the ACC, but it's not, because the difference there is the ACC schools are platforming after a deal has been done and they want exception. Now, look, there's a very serious concern there for the ACC. I'm not saying things are fine in the Atlantic Coast. I'm saying this, what's going on, what Richard just outlined, is very serious, because what it shows is before a deal is done, these ADs are signifying that either the man in charge of their conference has not earned their trust or is not communicating with them to their preferences, and they don't respect the process nor the group enough to be quiet. You would never, ever, ever see this in Chicago or Birmingham, ever, 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 ever.
Now, COVID aside with the Big Ten.
Not the same. Hey, COVID's one thing. This COVID's one thing. This is like hundreds of millions of dollars. I'm just telling you, this is more important to them than even the COVID thing was when you had conflicting Big Ten interests. This is a sign of poor health, and it's probably the biggest mark against Kliavkov since he got there. It's not the length of the deal and getting flanked by the Big 12 is a lot of those things you can't control, and you have to go into defense. But this, I think, is just, this is poor form, not being able to rally your member institutions and say, please stay quiet. In fact, I'm telling you, stay quiet publicly until this thing is done so we can show a sign of force. This is bad.
Pac-12, maybe making it a little bit too easy for the Big 12 to make a mess of things for it. And yet I still agree with Richard that the deal is eventually going to happen, hopefully by the time we record next for this feed, and everyone will move on and have a snack.
They're all joining the Big 12.